Hey everybody, Carl Stern here for the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show, WrestlingObserver.com, Figure4Online.com. Thank you very much for joining me here today in our rotation of classic wrestling shows. We are back around to the GKT tournament, the greatest kayfabe tournament. Maybe you've just joined us here and wondering, well, what is that? I've seen you post about that a few times. What's going on with this GKT? What does that even mean? Well, it is a fictional fantasy tournament. Now, just hold on. Just wait a minute. Let me explain. 64 people originally began, and you, the listener, vote for the winner. And these are, I won't say they were the greatest wrestlers of all time, although every single person in the 64-man tournament would certainly, I think, qualify to be on a, you know, at least a top 150 or if not top 100. But there's certainly 64 of the most recognizable, well-known names in the history of the wrestling business, very influential in their time periods. And what this is, of course, is just a fancy excuse to do some biographies and to talk about these various personalities, and also to kind of compare one period of time against another period of time. We are well in round two now, and if you want to listen to any of the previous matchups and maybe hear, you know, a little bit of biographical information about some of these wrestlers, do certainly go through the archives and listen to some of the previous shows. You can more easily find this information probably over at my website, which is whenitwascool.com, where on the Patreon content page, I have all these listed in order that we've done, so you can listen to the whole thing. And today we're around to another one of those era versus era matches where we're taking people from two different eras, and in a fantasy matchup, we're putting them against one another. And when I put this out on Twitter, and that is where you can vote, and I know Twitter is a very divisive platform. I have very much a hate relationship with Twitter as well, but do follow us on Twitter. We have changed our Twitter account, by the way, so if you think you're following us on Twitter, you may in fact not be. We made the decision over When It Was Cool several weeks back that, look, hey, so many bot accounts and fake accounts and dead accounts get to following you. We wanted to sort of wash things clean and get back over to actual real people following us and us following real people. So if you suspect you may not be following us, please go to the front page of whenitwascool.com and hit all of our social media links, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, all that good stuff. So when you look at these different eras of wrestlers, especially as we've done this tournament, and the tournament again asked the question, if wrestling were real. And now, I don't mean a shoot. I don't mean these people are going in there like, you know, this is a shoot fight. Who would really win in a real fight? No, no. It's what we love wrestling for to begin with. You remember way back in the day, and many of you younger listeners may not could even relate to this at all. Probably can't. But, man, back when I first started watching wrestling, a lot of people believed it was real. A lot of people believed, hey, you know, maybe they may be dressed up wacky. They may have, some of them have masks on. Some of them acted very over the top. But when they get in the ring, it's real, right? Well, it never was. Even all the way back in the Pioneer era, there was more of it that was work than shoot. So we asked the question, if wrestling were real, not a shoot, but the wrestlers as presented on TV were real, who would win? And I've noticed in some of these generational matchups, we have people from two different generations, that the older generation, the way back generation, doesn't usually fare too well. And if you think about it, you might off the top of your head say, well, it's unfairly skewed toward more modern wrestlers. People are going to know more nowadays, far more about Hiroshi Tanahashi than they know about Buddy Rogers. And that's probably true, especially when you get further back to those we really don't have videotape of, people like Frank Gotch and, you know, George Hackenschmidt and people like that, even Ed Strangler Lewis. While there is a fair amount of Ed Strangler Lewis footage around, it's not commonplace. People aren't just sitting around on YouTube watching Strangler Lewis matches, you know. So that it I concede that there may be, you know, skewed toward newer wrestlers, but at the same time, if you think about it, that also makes sense in the realistic sense, because wrestling should have evolved since the days of Buddy Rogers and Lou Thesz, should have evolved since the days of, you know, Gorgeous George and Bill Longson, and the days of Earl Caddick and Joe Stecker, and the days of Frank Gotch and Tom Jenkins and George Hackenschmidt, and so on and so forth, and certainly William Muldoon, and it has. You know, that's the interesting thing about pro wrestling. And over at whenitwascool.com, I do this thing called the Timeline of Wrestling History. It's called the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling Zone. And in the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling Zone, I'm literally chronicling the first 2,000 years of pro wrestling. Yes, it's a massive, never-ending project, but we've got a lot of stuff in there. Really, I've got stuff all the way up to the year 2000, but really it's not super complete up to about, you know, the mid-1980s so far, as I continue to add more stuff. I'm working a lot on 1989 right now, but that's given me the opportunity to really see over the years, you know, how things have changed so drastically. And watching video from these different times, it's obvious. I mean, you take a look at Hiroshi Tanahashi and the matches he's had in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and his, you know, some very great, very unforgettable IWGP World Championship matches compared to what Buddy Rogers was doing back in his time as the first ever WWF champion, also, of course, NWA World Heavyweight Champion. And it's really like two different things. And especially when you compare, and we've dug up some videotape going all the way back into the 1800s. And that has really no comparison to what they're doing today. But at the time, it was contemporary. And at the time, it was, you know, it was reflective of what, you know, wrestling combat was believed to look like in a worked sense. And today, it is far more showmanship, far more based on personalities. But even back then, I mean, Buddy Rogers was a huge personality. And in fact, most people would argue, and I think rightfully so, that the majority of this act was personality-based. Buddy Rogers is one of those few standouts. You know, I can think of others like Gorgeous George and maybe Ricky Starr and Antonino Rocca and people like that from that previous generation that, if you updated the ring work, could fit today because they had a charismatic factor that many of their peers and contemporaries didn't necessarily have. So with Buddy Rogers, I think he's a little bit different. Now, you, the listener, voted, and we have our results in, and, you know, I won't say this was a squash, but this was a resounding victory for Hiroshi Tanahashi. It was split right, you know, perfectly percentage-wise. 70% of you said Hiroshi Tanahashi wins this match. 30% said Buddy Rogers, and I think that's probably true. I mean, I love Hiroshi Tanahashi. He is one of my favorite of what I would call the modern era wrestlers. I know Tanahashi's been around a long while now, but I loved Tanahashi. He's probably one of my favorite, even beyond Okada, and I know Okada gets a lot of praise and a lot of press, and he's still in our tournament as well. He's still advancing in the GKT also, so we'll be talking more about him coming up when his next matchup arrives. But to me, it's Tanahashi. Tanahashi, just so charismatic. I can remember back, several years ago, as New Japan Pro Wrestling was really peaking in popularity, both in Japan and really in the United States. They had a lot of buzz going, had a lot of very interesting Western stars over there as well. They were having an absolute renaissance. And so I had not, you know, paid that much attention to Japanese wrestling in quite a long while. Japanese professional wrestling had its popularity had valued, and there wasn't really, you know, I wasn't that much into current modern professional wrestling anyway, and really lost track of what was going on over in Japan, other than just whatever I would hear on, like, through Dave and Brian or Mike and Adam's podcast or something like that. That'll be really my only, you know, way of keeping up with it. And so as it becomes more and more popular and I hear more and more about what's going on over there, I decided, you know, I need to watch some of this, check it out. So for a little while, I had a subscription to New Japan World, and I would catch, you know, videotapes whenever they would get on YouTube or some other video service, and usually they were pulled down pretty quick. But I started watching, and I was blown away by Tanahashi. I mean, he had it all together. Before he even got in the ring, he had this presence about him. He was a superstar. You could tell. He just commanded the audience. His gear looked super great, and I'm a big stickler for that. You know, especially in the modern era, you need to look like something interesting. Even back when I was, my biggest time as a wrestling fan was in the 1980s. And even back then, to look larger than life, you needed good gear. You needed to look like this is what you did. You're an entertainer. Put some money into your product. Put your money into yourself. You know, I can remember the first time one of my favorite wrestlers ever was a guy named Jerry Stubbs, who at the time was wrestling as Mr. Olympia down in the southeastern area, and he had great acclaim down in Mid-South wrestling as well. He didn't wrestle a lot of places, but he was very successful both in Bill Watts Mid-South and in Ron Fuller's southeastern wrestling and Continental. And I remember the first time I saw him, this would be the early 1980s, in southeastern, this guy comes out and he's got this green sequin jacket on. It's all glittery, and on the back he has Mr. Olympia embroidered on the back. So I know who this guy is before he ever says a word. He's got this matching mask on with this, you know, sequin look like, you know, he wore like a mass superstar type mask, but his Mr. Olympia's were often more colorful than were mass superstars. So this guy comes out and he's in great shape. He's tanned. He's muscular, and he cuts a good promo, and he just looks impressive. He catches your eye. Austin Idol comes out. Here's this bleach blonde guy, and he's cutting a promo, and he's telling you all about it. He's in great shape. He catches your eye. And certainly when I saw Tanahashi, I'm like, yeah, you know, this is a guy who is a professional. I mean, he looks, I don't know how good this guy is in the ring. I've heard, you know, he's one of the greatest ever. But before he even locked up for the first time, he looked tremendous. He was a star. And then as I get to watching his matches and stuff and kind of following his reign as IWGP champion and you know, all the different, you know, the Japanese tournaments like the G1 and stuff like that, even though I don't speak any Japanese at all, he was easy to follow. He was easy to watch. What he did in the ring made sense. It was very clear that he was an exceptional modern era professional wrestler. You know, I hate to use this term, but it's an accurate term. It comes from video games and stuff. But what's often called their move set. And their wrestlers do have different move sets. That's just a fact. I know a lot of old timers get kind of upset about that because it is a newer era term, although it's been around quite a while. But different wrestlers have different movesets. That's just a factual statement. And Hiroshi Tanahashi's was tremendous. And he was very graceful, and he was very exciting, and again, just looked like a superstar. Now flashback to the 1960s, and you have Buddy Rogers. And for his time period, there's a lot of similarities between he and Tanahashi. Now, he was never, Buddy Rogers was never for his time period, the equivalent of what Hiroshi Tanahashi was for his. Where Hiroshi Tanahashi at one time, I would say, was the number one best wrestler in the world, and at worst, he was in the top five. But he was certainly one of the top five very best in-ring wrestlers in the world. Now, Buddy Rogers, maybe not so much so. He probably approached the top five. There was probably a time period. I know much of what we get repeated for history from that time period, I've said this before, but it bears repeating, comes from Lou Thesz. And so Lou Thesz lived to be an older man. Old Buddy Rogers did too, but Lou Thesz connected with the wrestling, modern wrestling community. He stayed in contact with a lot of modern day wrestlers, trained a lot of modern day wrestlers, will periodically make appearances at different wrestling functions, even into the modern era. But more importantly than that, he became internet literate. And he would correspond with people on the internet. He would post on wrestling message boards. He would entertain questions. And he wrote a book called Hooker, which, you know, Lou Thesz, his roots in wrestling date way back, because his mentor was Ed Strangler Lewis, whose roots reach all the way back to Gotch, Frank Gotch era. And so through the stories he was told by Ed Strangler Lewis and through his own personal experience, he did meet even Farmer Burns. When Farmer Burns was an elderly man, Lou Thesz met him, talked about meeting him. But what the documentation of that era of wrestling, quote, behind the scenes, quote, breaking kayfabe for more or less, come from Lou Thesz. So, like many wrestlers, Lou Thesz was one of Lou Thesz's biggest fans. And if Lou Thesz liked you, well, you know, he talked positive and favorably about you. And if he didn't, well, maybe you didn't get much of a mention. And Lou Thesz definitely did not like Buddy Rogers. And they were career rivals. Lou Thesz seldom ever put Buddy Rogers over. In doing the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling, I can only think of one time for sure that he put Buddy Rogers over down in Texas. And there may be others, but there's certainly not many. There's a Lou Thesz record book that you can get off Amazon and check that out for yourself and whatever. I don't have my copy with me right now, but very, very seldom. And certainly, definitely not after a certain point did Lou Thesz even entertain the idea of putting over Buddy Rogers. Buddy Rogers was considered by Lou Thesz an entertainer, and while Lou Thesz considered himself a real deal wrestler, even though every one of Lou Thesz's matches were works, were, you know, predetermined matches, still, they were more realistic in style and nature, and Lou Thesz considered himself a real shooter and hooker, and many people considered Lou Thesz that. Lou Thesz really doesn't have that much of a documented history as a shooter. He doesn't have like this great amateur background that one can point to. He wasn't like a NCAA heavyweight champion or anything like that. He come up through wrestling differently. He doesn't have that collegiate back or Olympic background like some others. He's like Vern Gagne, who was another, you know, era rival for Lou Thesz. But he didn't have that much respect for Buddy Rogers and his old act. But wrestling became what Buddy Rogers was less than what Lou Thesz was. If you've then follow wrestling from the 1960s up through especially the 1980s and 1990s, it looks way more like what Buddy Rogers was doing than what Lou Thesz was. And I thought Buddy Rogers really was a great personality. There's the famous interview after he wins the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. They're in a stadium with tens of thousands of people around. I mean, this wasn't some rinky-dink, what was it Triple H said, like pool hall or bar or whatever his statement was. No, there's like, you know, almost around 40,000 people. I think it's more like 35,000 people there when Buddy Rogers wins the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And he makes that famous promo where he says, to a nicer guy, it couldn't have happened. You know, so he was charismatic, especially for the era. He was definitely a TV star. I mean, he really was a TV star. He looked the part and he was great. Now, Buddy Rogers has also a lot of similarities to another, you know, Buddy Rogers had some things in common also with another modern era performer, one Shawn Michaels. Now, in ring, no, certainly they looked nothing alike, but much like Shawn Michaels, Buddy Rogers had a way of figuring out how not necessarily to do the job. Buddy Rogers was a pretty doggone the original master of getting out of doing title changes and matches he didn't want to do and things of that nature. There's still to this day much confusion about the losing of the first WWF championship from Buddy Rogers to Bruno Sammartino, where he goes in and does that quick job. Supposedly, the story is, the quote, I guess, officially accepted wrestling history version is, Buddy Rogers had a heart condition and went in and did a quick loss to Bruno Sammartino. He did take time off afterwards. Bruno had most often his version of the story was that, you know, it was a shoot that he went in and said, well, we can do him basically the old, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. He goes in, picks him up with a bear hug, wins the title, and that's that. You know, did Buddy Rogers have a heart attack? Did he have a heart issue or something? People have debated this ever since it happened. There's no real clear-cut, unequivocal evidence that Buddy Rogers had a heart attack or heart condition. Now, there is some supporting evidence in the amount of time he takes off and whatever, and the matches he wrestled soon thereafter, that maybe he had an issue. Who knows? Who knows the truth of it? And I doubt even Buddy Rogers knew the truth of it, quite honestly. So he was quite the, quote, worker, so to speak, in every way. He rubbed, like Shawn Michaels, he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. There's the famous story where he gets his arm broken in the dressing room by Dr. Bill Miller and Carl Gotch. They slam a door on his arm, breaking his arm legitimately, and in fact are arrested by the police for it. You know, Buddy Rogers, you know, he had a way of not necessarily making friends. But if you look at just the thing we're worried about here in the Greatest Kayfabe Tournament, it's not how many star ratings you can have, not how many stars your matches are going to be, but what we originally loved wrestling for, most of us. Now, some of you may have gotten involved in wrestling to see how many stars somebody has, and good for you, whatever makes you love it, good, that's good. But for the most part, most of us came in watching wrestling at a younger age because we wanted to see these very colorful characters having a fight. I mean, this was an action movie, really, in TV format. I mean, that's what it was. No different than Bruce Lee or Chuck Norris or something like that, with all the boring other parts cut out. You know, let's just put two, you know, over-the-top characters in the ring, have a little bit of a storyline going around it, and let them have a fictionalized fight around that. That's good. That's a video game. That's an action movie. That's what we all love about it. And, you know, I actually think the match, if you just look at it, you take Buddy Rogers in his prime, Hiroshi Tanahashi in their prime, they're both great athletes. Now, Tanahashi's just an athlete, and a modern athlete. So, you know, on a scale that is even above and beyond Buddy Rogers would be Hiroshi Tanahashi as an athlete. But make no mistake about it, Buddy Rogers was a great athlete for his day and for his time. Certainly looked great, kept himself in tremendous shape. Even into an older age, he kept himself into great shape. And so I think their match actually would be kind of interesting. I really think Buddy Rogers would have worked a pretty entertaining match with Tanahashi. I think he would have taken good bumps for him. Even though Buddy Rogers' work would have been antiquated, I think it would have been his offense, quite frankly, that would have looked the worst. Remember, these old-timers could really sell the action pretty good. And I think with the dynamic movements and the dynamic style of Tanahashi, especially his high flying moves and stuff, if Buddy Rogers, you know, would have just got on board with the match, with the show, we would have probably had a pretty doggone entertaining. I think this match ends the only way it could possibly end, with a high five flow from Hiroshi Tanahashi on to Buddy Rogers, and that's that. It's just, in a lot of ways, it's kind of unfair. It's sort of like comparing apples to oranges. Hiroshi Tanahashi is just everything a modern-era wrestler should be and could be. He is an evolution beyond what Buddy Rogers was. And while Buddy Rogers was great in his day, especially as far as his personality and his presentation goes, I mean, wrestling has just come so far from what it was in Buddy Rogers' day. But, you know, if you've never had a chance or really never took the time to watch Buddy Rogers and you really want to study the art of professional wrestling, I encourage you to go look up some Buddy Rogers. I think you're going to be really impressed with his promos and even his in-ring work. you know, it's, again, it's not modern wrestling. It's something more rudimentary than what we would have today, and it shouldn't be judged by 2022 standards. But if you go back and look, you can definitely see, it's kind of like going back and listening to old rock and roll music. Yeah, you know, the Bill Haley in the comments and Elvis Presley and people like that may not, you know, sound as sophisticated as what come along later on, but you can, in that music, you can hear the building blocks of it. You can see, oh, okay, well, here's how this thing progresses, and I understand now why it's great, because number one, these were the first, you know, earliest people to do this. They captured something that others later built upon. Well, Buddy Rogers had that same thing. And again, I think in so many aspects, as far as the entertainment portion of wrestling, that it built upon a lot of what Buddy Rogers did and was doing. And of course, earlier predecessors, the Nat, Gorgeous George, and folks like that as well. But we're talking about Buddy Rogers here, and he really was one of the greatest showmen of his time. So take a minute and maybe catch up on some of that. And boy, I tell you what, Hiroshi Tanahashi at his peak, one of my favorite wrestlers ever, in my personal top 100. And one of these days I am going to do a 100 greatest wrestlers of all time at When It Was Cool. I know that is a daunting list and one you can never possibly satisfy everybody on. We've done these lists before, 100 greatest rock and roll acts and all that. But I've never done wrestlers yet because it's so hard to do. Because again, you're comparing apples to oranges a lot of the time. But, you know, Hiroshi Tanahashi, I don't see how you don't put him very high up that list. He is just one of the all-time greatest, and so he advances here in the GKT, the Greatest Kayfabe Tournament. And we're going to take about 30 seconds right here. Let me tell you about something that's very important and needed by me. And when we come back, I'll tell you who Hiroshi Tanahashi will be advancing to face in the Greatest Kayfabe Tournament and who our next show will be about in the GKT, our next matchup in this fictional tournament. You decide, you the listener decide. Again, you should be following us on Twitter so you can be sure to vote on this when it comes up. Go to the front page of whenitwascool.com and follow all of our social media links if you would please. And we'd love to have you participate in our community. Next month, this month and next month, we're really going to be pushing for new memberships. We're going to be doing a lot of things, hopefully getting a lot of publicity coming up with some stuff we're working on. So now's the time. I've been saying it forever. Now's the time. And so let's take a quick break, come back, and then we'll talk what happens next in the Greatest Kayfabe Tournament.
We depend on Patreon support for our website and podcast network. In order to continue these podcasts you enjoy, we need you to visit whenitwascool.com and pledge at least $1. You'll gain access to lots of exclusive podcasts, newsletters, and more. Sign up is quick, simple, and can be canceled at any time. whenitwascool.com and click any Patreon link. Thank you.
All right, we're back, and to wrap everything up, the advancement in the tournament to the next round, Tanahashi advances and will face, and this is a classic Japanese matchup between two people that never met, from two different eras, but not so different. We can certainly imagine this matchup happening nowadays. Bruiser Brody, who has entered round three, will face Hiroshi Tanahashi in the next round. So that is a dream match, to be sure, two legends from two different eras. So your next time we see Hiroshi Tanahashi in the tournament, he'll be facing Bruiser Brody, so be sure to vote on that. Our next show is also going to be a very Japanese-centric tournament matchup. Two totally different eras, two totally different worlds, same wrestling company. We talked about earlier Okada. Yes, Okada will face, in round two, none other than the man whom, if it weren't for him, there would be no Kazuchika Okada's New Japan Pro Wrestling to even be a legend in. Yes, Antonio Inoki. Antonio Inoki against Kazuchika Okada is our next matchup when we get around to the Greatest Kayfabe Tournament again. Of course, as we roll through our show schedule, we do a different type show every time we are here that mixes things up. Our next show in the series will be a return to the early days of Madison Square Garden as we look at the history of pro wrestling at Madison Square Garden. We're up now to the second Madison Square Garden. We've moved on from the original, which was Gilmore's Garden, into what is now Madison Square Garden. We're in the days like the William Muldoon era. And, boy, we've talked about, if you don't listen to those shows, listen, I encourage you to, because you're going to get a real education in 1800s era wrestling. If you're under the presumption, as most people I think are, that, oh, wrestling was real back then, it was these very boring, you know, Greco-Roman or you know, collegiate-style matches, and they'd roll around on the mat for 2 or 3 hours and, you know, no action or nothing. No, it was every bit as entertainment-oriented as it is today. It was essentially vaudeville with sport to it. Some of the stories we've talked about have been absolutely ridiculous. Workers and carnies to rival anything we've seen in the modern era, and I'm sure we're going to learn even more next episode as we go back to New York City, New York, to the second Madison Square Garden. And then following that, for listeners over at my website, When It Was Cool, if you're a Patreon supporter over there, we're going to go through the Wrestling Observer newsletter for back in 1983, the second issue of the Observer from 1983. Back then it came out monthly. And so we will see what covers, I think, April of 1983 will be the next long-form history of wrestling. But before we do that show, we're going to actually go through the Observer and see if there's any news or notes that we can add to the timeline over at When It Was Cool for that show. So that's just for listeners over at whenitwascool.com. So we've done this twice now, very popular show. Many of you have never seen these 1983 Observers. They are very good. They are absolutely behind-the-scenes stuff, just like you expect from the Observer. So if that sounds interesting to you, pay me a visit over at whenitwascool.com and become a Patreon supporter over there. All right, that is it for the Greatest Kayfabe Tournament this episode. And in the meantime, join me over at whenitwascool.com for much, much more, and I'll see you here again soon with another show.
If you liked what you heard, go to whenitwascool.com.
This is the sound of the 80s. Everybody's looking for it, and we've got it.
And hit that Patreon button.
If you'll excuse me, I need to go buy a new Cyndi Lauper CD and have myself a little cry.